Hard numbers are hard to find, but one source indicates more than 80 million Americans participate in sports. A lot of them are our kids or grandkids, starting with Little League and continuing through high school. With so many youngsters involved in dozens of different sports, it seems worth spending a little time thinking about how their participation is or should be, how it's impacting their minds and bodies, and their future lives. We're loosely calling today's show a Parent's Guide to Sports, this week on Town Hall, Ohio.
This is Town Hall, Ohio, home to interesting people, engaging issues, and enlightening stories. Town Hall, Ohio is a production of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, working to forge a partnership between farmers and consumers, and is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Now, here's Town Hall, Ohio host, Joe Corneli.
Like many of you, I played sports as a kid. I gave up on baseball at 12 when I went hitless for the whole summer. My main contribution to our high school basketball team was I could set picks and take charges. Who actually needs to touch the ball? And please don't ask about my disjointed lunge of a golf swing. But whether you are a bench warmer or a blossoming elite athlete, there are many positive outcomes from playing sports, and maybe some not so positive ones as well. How do we get it right for our kids who engage in sports? Helping us answer that question, we have two guests with us today. Dr. Chris Stankovich is founder of Advanced Human Performance Systems. That's an athletic counseling and performance center. And Dr. Philip Ward is professor of physical education at The Ohio State University, who, among other things, teaches phys ed teachers. So, Chris and Phil, welcome to Town Hall, Ohio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So just to get us started, briefly to introduce you to our listeners, Phil, what exactly is it you do at Ohio State?
I'm the, one of my jobs is the director of the Master of Sports Coaching degree at Ohio State. It's a degree focused on coaches who work in high schools, NCAA, professional settings, Olympic sports, and it's a two-year master's degree.
And Chris, how about the business that you've started?
Yeah, it's a center where I see athletes, professional, all the way down to youth level, focus on performance enhancement, life skills development, career development, clinical issues that we might see, psychological issues.
I don't know, as I said at the top, what the stats are, but in large and small cities, rural communities across Ohio, across the nation, sports is ingrained in many of our family lives. Chris, what is it that makes sports at the youth and high school level so relevant to so many people?
Well, it's the common denominator that brings people together. I think that it's a great thing that kids in this country have the opportunity to participate. Certainly, there are physical advantages to playing sports, and I think those are obvious, but I would argue there are a lot of mental and emotional components that sometimes go unseen. I think learning athletic transferable skills is invaluable. We started working on that 20, 25 years ago, not really seeing it in the literature, that term. We started to introduce it more and more frequently and specifically identify some of those skills, setting and achieving goals, working with teammates, handling adversity, the very same skills that you need to be successful in life. And I think sometimes even today we overlook those or take them for granted. And that's unfortunate because they build self-confidence. And again, you can really use that to go far beyond what your sports career will likely be. And that is for most student athletes, high school will be, 95% of them. Only a small, very small percentage goes on to play after that.
Yeah, I think children come to play sport for a variety of reasons. And for decades now, when you ask them what that reason is, the most common reason is that they have fun. But when you unpack that a bit more, I think you get at what Chris is getting at. They come for a multiple set of reasons to have fun, and some of these have higher priorities at different times. Sometimes they like joy, like a bunch of preschoolers running out on a field, just happy to be outside. Sport produces that outcome, and that's really important. They would like to have fun to be with their teammates, and they like the competition that is there, as long as it's a fair competition. The playing field is fair. The thing they dislike most is an unfair playing field. I think tied to having fun is competence. I don't think you can just go out and play volleyball, poorly day after day and a week or 3 weeks later say you're having fun. That doesn't tend to happen. It's very much tied to children and young adults learning to be more skillful and being able to play the game well and getting these outcomes of being with their friends, the joy of playing, the success of winning, the accomplishments that motivate them to be there. So I think there are a lot of reasons why sport is so important for folks to participate in. And it's also a big part of our culture, and it always has been, I think.
So when I was a kid, it was baseball, football, basketball. And now my grandchildren can choose from, you know, more than a dozen kinds of sports. Reflect on how we've expanded the opportunities, Phil, in terms of what kind of sport you can get into.
Well, you know, if you were driving around the neighborhood before 1972, before Title IX, you wouldn't have seen many young women, young girls out playing. You may not have even seen a lot of mums out with their kids. It would have been a sort of male dad and son sort of thing. Now, if you drive around on a Saturday morning, they're playing softball. They've got other sport, multiple sports, women's and men's basketball and gymnastics and cheerleading and dance. And all of these things fall under the larger umbrella of performance. And mums are involved just as much as dads right now. I think the choices are limited to what's available in the community. And the larger the community, probably the more choices in sports that are available.
I'll take that question a little bit differently. I agree with everything he said there. I think a couple other wrinkles that are worth noting. You now have the sports specialist today. And unlike what you just mentioned a moment ago, Joe, the seasonal athlete, the three-sport letter winner, it's almost a dying prototype. You now have kids that specialize in one sport, sometimes very early in life, and they'll play that sport 10, 11, 12 months a year. And even that prototype may be a little dated as far as what's going on today. What I'm seeing now in the last 2, 3, 4 years are student athletes who play several sports concurrent to one another. So they'll play two and sometimes three sports over the course of a summer. And, you know, you can imagine some of the logistical nightmares there and letting down respective teams and whatnot. But, you know, I think it's a product of a number of different factors. Some is family-based, some is society, community-based. Some is driven by coaches who really don't want these kids taking any time off, but yet they still want to do a separate sport. And so you run into a number of different issues there.
So Chris mentioned that one of the goals that he works on, Phil, is building life skills. And I couldn't help but think as you were talking about that was popping into my head is 4-H and FFA, mm-hmm. very similar, not mm-hmm. the athletic component, mm-hmm. but developing good citizens for the future. Should that be the goal, or are there other goals that as we look at youth sports in particular in general, we should be aiming for?
You know, I think at the end of the day, when people talk about character, what they're talking about are a set of behaviors that people are going to take from sport and use elsewhere in their lives, and particularly as they grow up. I don't think there's anything more important than the development of these behaviors, because the failure to develop these behaviors almost always leads to all the problems that we might see interpersonally that occur in sport. So it's a really important goal. And when coaches talk about character and sport, this is the important thing. And when I talk to coaches at the elite level, I ask them if I were to bring their athletes back into the gymnasium or in the field with them and ask their athletes, what did they all learn from this coach? And the extent to which all those athletes talk about the same sorts of things, they would have learned some individual things, but the extent to which they talk about the same sorts of things is the extent to which that program, that culture that coach has developed has sort of recurringly taught these young men and women what it means to be a good citizen, what it means to be a good person in life from their experiences in sport.
Other characteristics you see that you define as being that good person, Chris?
Well, there's countless skills, I think, when you really pay attention. But I'd like to expand that even a little bit, because I think...
Sure, just whatever you want.
Well, I think if the pursuit is to be a professional athlete, families should take pause. When you have a success rate of about 5% of all high school student athletes being able to participate at the college level, which includes your walk-ons and partial scholarships, not just your full rides, and then if you take all of the college student athletes playing today it's about 1.5% of those athletes that go on to actually make a living at the professional level. So when you look at it that way, I remember speaking at a conference many, many years ago, and one of the attendees made the comment that if you look at it statistically, you've got a greater chance at being a brain surgeon or a rocket scientist than a pro athlete. I think that puts it in perspective perfectly. So my argument is, if you're not picking up some skills along the way, you might question the endeavor altogether. It should be a learning experience. You should be bettering yourself as a human being. And where better to do it than a sports field, I would argue.
That's Dr. Chris Stankovich of Advanced Human Performance Systems. Also in the room with us, Dr. Phil Ward. He's a professor of physical education at Ohio State University. So if we're trying to teach a whole bunch of different life skills, the performance piece is okay, the fun, all of that. Just maybe your thoughts on, you hear this debate going on now about participation trophies and whether or not there should even be winners in games. Why are we keeping score? And why does this kid get a trophy and that kid doesn't? Phil, maybe some thoughts on do we teach, or should we be teaching, that sometimes there are winners and losers?
Yeah, well, that I think that's the nature of sport. The issue here is whether it's a one-time win or a one-time lose. One learns to deal with winning and losing through many opportunities of that occurring in a season, and a fairly reasonable level playing field. Not all rec leagues and not all youth leagues set up the playing field to be as level as it could be. And there's some leagues that, in fact, pre-test their students beforehand, their athletes beforehand, and put them into teams that are moderately of similar ability. And then you've got a reasonably good opportunity of moving forward with a fair, with a level playing field. I think the critical issue here is to have students develop their competence in performance. I think I've lost the track of the question there.
So, well, yeah. But is it okay to delineate between winners and losers when we're talking about youth sports?
Yeah, I'm fine. I have no problem with that as long as there are many opportunities to win and lose and it's a reasonably level playing field. But winning and losing is not a critical issue here. If I tie this sort of to the previous question, I've interviewed a ton of high-level coaches, and every one of them will tell me it's not the X's and O's that matter, it's the relationships that matter. And coaches at all levels need to understand it. Understanding and helping children deal with successes and failures are important.
Chris, your thoughts?
Well, I think the participation award has become a white-hot subject. I have my own views. I respect those of others. I agree with a lot of what he's saying. I think there should be winners and losers, and I think you can do this very early on. And I have no problem with the winners getting a slightly bigger trophy than the losers. However, I also don't have a problem with some sort of a participation reward. We've been doing this forever. Kids get varsity letters at the high school level, often for playing very little. I mean, I would argue that's a participation award. I also think that it's difficult. It's challenging for that kid rounding out the bench to make all those practices and sit there every practice and game. I don't have a problem with a token award being given at the end of the season for that. In fact, I think that that positive reinforcement can really direct future behaviors that are even better and give that child a greater chance to play.
You just broke my heart. My letter jacket that used to hang in the closet was a participation award. Thanks a lot for ruining my sports life. We'll be back to talk more about the value and challenges that might come with sports for youth and at the high school level. Helping us talk about that today from Ohio State, Dr. Phil Ward, and from Advanced Human Performance Systems, Dr. Chris Stankovich.
Well, I thought that maybe baseball could be a sport that I could love. But on the very first day I caught a line drive and it was not in my glove. Oh, that's why football was a good call for me. Screaming fans up in the stands drowned out my knocking knees. And to keep from winding up with the ball, I just ran further than the quarterback could throw. Yeah, football was a good call for me.
Athletics for our young people and high school students, our topic today, and what are we doing right and maybe not quite so right with helping young people shape their lives through sports. My guests, Dr. Phil Ward from Ohio State and Dr. Chris Stankovich, founder of Advanced Human Performance Systems. Let's get to the physical and emotional piece of this, especially for young people. And Chris, we'll start with you. How do you judge which sport at what level is age appropriate for youngsters?
That's a good question. I don't know that there's any one sport that I would single out as necessarily bad in that sense. I do think you have to pay greater attention to sports that have more contact, particularly with head injuries so much in the news, and we're learning so much about that. I think it's really more appropriate to provide opportunities for safe play. I think Dr. Ward's comment about fun being front and center, because if they're not enjoying it, they're not going to play very long. But I can't really think of anything that I wouldn't introduce. I think with the right people around, the right guardrails there, I think just about anything's okay.
Phil, your thoughts? You're not going to start a five-year-old weightlifting.
Ah, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. There are a number of issues here. My first premise is that because children are attracted to things that are fun, they ought to have some choice in what they're doing, rather than just mum or dad taking them along. On the other hand, young children don't know what the experiences are they could experience, and so it's valuable to let them explore a number of different activities at a young age. Developmentally, I think there are two kind of different paths here a little bit. So I tend to draw a little bit on the European model that differentiates between participation that emphasizes just enjoyment and competent performance, and that mode, which would be performance orientated more towards a young gymnast, for example, working towards being an Olympian or state representative or whatever. And so for young children, recreational environments where they're participating once or twice a week are perfectly fine. As they move up a continuum, I think opportunities to understand how the game is played and to engage in winning and losing slowly. But it's the thing I would emphasize is sport looks best in the practice, and you see it. You see the characteristics of what you're trying to emphasize in the practice in the game. And so practice matters. How practices are conducted matters.
Now, your choices at the high school level are limited, but as a youth parent or grandparent, help me understand what I should be looking for in coaching. I mean, when my son Chuck was in baseball, we had one guy that really knew the game, and then we had a bunch of dads that, hit fungos. But when you're looking for a coach, what kind of things should you be looking for, especially at that youth level?
I think it's really important you look for a coach who's in it for the kids. They're in it because they enjoy coaching. They're not in it necessarily because they just want to win and some of the other accolades you might get for it. You need someone who likes working with kids, who wants to teach these young athletes the game, who enjoys, wants them to experience the sorts of positive experiences they had. It's essentially a caring perspective, like you might find with nurses or teachers.
I would add to that, I think they should be well versed in basic first aid and how to look for potentially dangerous situations. I think formal training should be delivered along the lines of boundaries and appropriate language. Nowadays with social media, I've had a number of these cases through my office over the years where coaches have had inappropriate relationships with student athletes. I think we really have to emphasize that. So ironically, the sports skill development would probably come after those things, because I think if you have an unsafe environment or an unsafe coach, I don't know that anything else matters at that point.
Okay, so we've got the coach that's safe and has the kids' best interest at heart, but shouldn't there at least be some level of expertise in the game? My neighbor often talks about when his left-hander first started Little League, the coach put him at second base. So doesn't there need to be at least some level of knowing the game?
Well, I think you would aspire for that, but the reality is in a lot of places around the country, it's difficult to find an individual to coach. And so, yes, that would be aspirational if you can do that, but sometimes that's not always feasible.
I couldn't agree more. It's not one thing or the other. It's all of these things. You want someone coaching your high school athlete in particular at that level when they meet so frequently who's got competence in a number of areas. And one of the areas that I do most of my research is on is what do teachers and coaches know? And it's an ongoing problem. Most coaches acquire what they know through experience, and that might not be the best way to do it, or it might take them a long time to get the knowledge they need to acquire. These are the big issues for coaching, for coaches' education, coach development, and I'm not sure we do a good job of that as a nation in helping coaches. Other countries do a much better job.
Well, I have 30 seconds. I know that's part of what you do is help coaches become better. What kind of just the headlines of what you want them to know?
Well, it's relationships. You know, as I mentioned earlier, very few of these kids are going to go on to Fulbright scholarships or become pro athletes. So it's really about those relationships, and I find it very exciting when I talk to kids at my office who, when they're asked about the mentors or people who help shape their lives, they go back to their coaches. That's a great thing.
We will be back to continue our conversation on the importance of athletics in the lives of our young people in Ohio, from youth sports all the way up through high school. We're visiting today with Dr. Chris Stankovich, founder of Advanced Human Performance Systems, and Dr. Philip Ward, professor of physical education at Ohio State. We'll be back right after this.
Oh, pitch and catch and hit and run, how hard can it be? Yeah, but if you think it's just a game, you're wrong as you can be. I've never had a harder job, more stress and more fatigue than the year I volunteered to coach the Little League.
Welcome back to Town Hall, Ohio. In the studio with me today, Dr. Chris Stankovich, who founded Advanced Human Performance Systems, Dr. Phil Ward, professor of physical education at Ohio State University. We're talking about Little League and high school sports and how we can make it a valuable experience for our young people. We talked, Phil, a little bit about coaches. Talk to us a little bit about the access that young and high school athletes should have to proper medical care, whether it's an actual physician or a team trainer. What should we as parents and grandparents be considering if our kids are in the right circumstances there?
Yeah, there's a variety of resources that are available today that just get better every year. Part of this is tied to the financial environment that the sport's being conducted in. So whether you've got athletic trainers available, whether you've got physicians available, physician assistants available, various supporting groups within those areas. I think it depends very much on the nature of the sport. A contact sport should have more a higher medical presence than, a sport where there's not as much contact, such as tennis, for example. No contact, in fact. So I think you want to match the needs of the sport and the potential issues that might come up in the sport to the medical support services that are available.
Chris, you had mentioned this briefly before, the whole more awareness of head trauma, particularly in football, but soccer and other sports too. Are we making progress there on two fronts, understanding it and then being able to protect our kids?
I think we're making a lot of progress understanding it. I actually have a client of mine today who's in Pittsburgh working with a team specialist for his CTE symptoms from basketball. So I think, you know, there's a lot of really scholarly people in this area. The second part of that question, though, I find really interesting because we have to take a step back and look at, for example, football. We see a lot of CTE there. It's certainly not unique to football, but that's the sport where we hear about it the most. You really can only mitigate these problems, as I see it, in one of two ways. You either have better equipment that protects or better rules that safeguard against these injuries from occurring. That gets into a very complex situation. How much more advanced can we make this equipment? I mean, look at football helmets today from even 10 years ago. They look like they were, you know, made by NASA. I mean, they're really amazing, and it's still not doing the job as some research is showing. Secondly, how much can you change the rules and still maintain what these sports are? I don't know that you would fill stadiums across America if football turned into two-hand touch. So, you know, and then you throw in the X variable of athletes today, bigger, stronger, faster. where does this go? And I think there's factual evidence out there that we can talk about, but then there's a lot of hearsay. And the effects are, one of the things I've seen more recently, we're seeing football numbers decline in many suburbs across America and increase in urban areas. So you even have a demographic slant to it, and they're parsing through the reasons why that is. But I don't know if you're seeing that.
Yeah, I'm actually involved with USA Football on a project right now that's designed to ask some questions about entry levels for young people into football. Using a sort of development model, one of the big issues with head injuries between, say, a pro and a child is the brain's still developing, and we don't really have an incredible sense of what happens with that. And so the focus, when a child gets hit and their brain's still developing, we don't know what are the long-term consequences there. And if you're looking at football, the average high school player has about 234 repetitive head impacts during a season. Now, they're not concussions, but that's the brain moving up against the side of the skull and what we might normally call, it's not really called this, but sort of like bruising. And that's a lot. And we don't know, we have a lot better data right now on what's happening with adults and not enough with children. Our focus is, could you learn to play the game of football while your brain was developing without it being a contact sport, such as flag football? And that shift in numbers, a lot of kids who are playing football are moving to flag football. And that's probably a good way to keep the game going. The only difference in that game is essentially the physical contact of blocking and tackling.
You know, and to add to that, I think what we're going to see is more investigation of the sports beyond football. Many of the sports that don't wear helmets at all, basketball, soccer, some of these athletes take more risks. Some of the impact is more dramatic. So I think it's been unfortunate for football because football's gotten the brunt of it to date. But I think you're going to start to see more and more numbers. And it'll be interesting where this goes and the impact it has on sport interest and participation.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
We're chatting with Dr. Phil Ward from Ohio State and Dr. Chris Stankovich, who's a private consultant on human performance in athletics. When we come back, we're going to get into the part of the show that I probably would like to have done the whole hour on. When it comes to youth sports, how can we make sure we're not that dad? And you guys know exactly what I'm talking about. We'll get to that on Town Hall, Ohio, right after this.
If I'm not in the game, she yells at the coach. Then if they strike me out, she yells at the ump. If I mess up,
stay still, don't twitch.
She gives me a kiss.
Hey, that was a ball, you son of a...
Should anyone have to put up with this?
So that's where we're headed on Town Hall, Ohio today. Don't be that parent. That's my preaching moment for the show. Dr. Chris Stankovich of Advanced Human Performance Systems, Dr. Phil Ward of Ohio State University, and joining us now, Jerry Snodgrass, who heads up the Ohio High School Athletic Association. Jerry, welcome to the studio.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
So that's what I wanted to talk a lot about today. And Jerry, since you're just joining us now, I'm going to throw that question to you. Here's my quick story. My kids in Little League Baseball, actually it was high school baseball. We've been playing in a tournament up in Cleveland. One of the moms was yelling at the umpire time and time and time again, and this young man, I won't name his name, but he steps out of the batter box, turns around, looks up into the stands, and yells, "Mom, shut up!" How do you assess our inability sometimes as parents to just chill when the kids are on the field?
You know, not that this is everything, but I'm an educator. I spent, you know, my other life educating as a teacher. Good or bad, I have a degree in counseling. So they do kind of go hand in hand. Recently at a sportsmanship meeting in Northwest Ohio, there were 48 kids in attendance. And those 48 were asked, maybe in a loaded question, but how many of your parents have ever done anything that embarrassed you at a ball game? All 48 raised their hands. And I think it does go back to the education standpoint that we do have to focus more on what we're dealing with on the sportsmanship aspect of parents. We have a sportsmanship ethics and integrity committee, and in all fairness, and I think we've done a good job with it, we focused on the kids. And by and large, our kids are pretty good at games. I think that's a real mindset change. I give Chris a lot of credit for that, what he's done with our students, you know, throughout the last couple of years. It's the adults we need to focus on. And our Sportsmanship Ethics and Integrity Committee, the SEI Committee, is really challenged right now to start looking at programs directed at them.
Agree with everything he says. You know, one of the terms that we're seeing in the literature now is the lawnmower parent. It's no longer the helicopter parent who hovers overhead, but, you know, the lawnmower parent that just mows people out of the way. You know, it's interesting when I think about the athletes, even people who have been very successful in life, one of the main characteristics you always see is resiliency. The ability to handle tough situations, adversity, to bounce back. You know, if you're that parent and you're constantly interfering, coaching the coach, doing those things, you're really not doing your child any favors. So I think help, you know, provide that assistance, but let your kids figure some things out. It's okay.
Yeah, I think I would sort of take an additional step here and suggest that we need to think of everyone involved in the athletic experience as a community. Parents are part of that community. And so the culture that a coach would want to develop for their athletes, there also ought to be a culture of how to behave in the community to support the team. That requires education. That requires an emphasis on we're all part of the same team. That's missing right now. We tend to divorce and keep the sort of what's happening to the athletes separate to the parent involvement. I think that needs to be connected in ways from the perspective of we're all part of a community.
So the misbehaving parent, Jerry, are they predominant enough? Are they there enough that you see it have an impact? Maybe not in high school, but maybe in youth sports. Do you have a hard time getting referees because they don't want to get beat up? Do you have hard time getting coaches because they're just sick of dealing with the parents?
We are at a crisis level right now, not just in Ohio, but I think across the nation in both of those. Lack of officials, and you could just extrapolate that with less officials. Essentially, we may have less qualified officials working, leading to more issues as a result of that. So, and the coaching turnover is incredible. The last look I did, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, 63% of our girls' high school basketball coaches were no longer teachers. And I'm not saying they're all bad. It just adds a layer of increasing the education for coaches that way. So it has such a ripple effect. And I think when I say it's at a crisis mode, I think those are the fundamental things we need to focus on just as much as we are with state championships.
Am I the only one that sees this? You guys are all nodding your head yes, so I'm not the only one. But do parents recognize it? Chris, do you ever have that moment where the parent goes, wow, I've been a jerk?
Oftentimes the next day. I don't think in the throes of the moment they see that. You know, I always make the argument logic and emotions are on opposite ends of the continuum. And when you're really emotional, you're not logical and so on. So, yeah, ironically, though, many of the conversations I have with parents after the fact, they often deeply regret their behaviors. It's just in the moment. You know, it's the old ABC Wide World of Sports. Remember the thrill of victory, agony, defeat? You experience all that at a sporting event.
We'll be back to wrap up our conversation on youth and high school sports across Ohio. Our guests in the room, Dr. Phil Ward from Ohio State, Dr. Chris Stankovich, who is the founder of Advanced Human Performance Systems, Jerry Snodgrass, executive director of the Ohio High School Athletic Association, will return right after this.
You are a teacher, preacher, mother, father, a lot less taker than giver, a keeper of secrets and constantly making believe.
Back on Town Hall, Ohio, youth and high school sports, our topic today, and Phil Ward from Ohio State is in the room with us. Phil, I know you can't do this in just a couple of minutes, but I'm going to ask you to. So as a parent or a grandparent, are there signs that my kid might be that athlete, that their sport might get them their college tuition paid for? How do you tell between being just the bench warmer and the next Baker Mayfield?
Yeah, I think there is not one sign. There's a cluster of them. John Wooden talked about effort that he was interested in people who could stick with it, put in 100% effort. That's a characteristic you want to be looking for in young athletes who might make it. They have to be competent. They have to have the competence to be able to make the performance that they need to do. They need to be able to, in games, be able to read the plays. And some of that is experience, some of that's taught, and some of that is just plain talent. So those are some things where you might look at the young performer and go, wow, that kid's got something there. But they have to have competence. They've got to have effort to put in. They've got to enjoy what they're doing. They've got to have resilience if they get into trouble and are unsuccessful in one area, and they need to keep persevering and developing that. When I talk to coaches, those are the things they often look for when they're selecting their athletes.
Jerry, one of the things that unfortunately can limit participation in sports at all levels is it just costs more money now. Do you see that having an impact on the participation in high school athletics? And, you know, you don't want a kid to not be able to play because mom and dad can't afford it. So is it happening, and how are you addressing it?
I think it's happening in a great degree. I pushed very hard recently in my former position to try to get a handle, a little bit more oversight with youth sports. It's a $3 billion a year industry. And I'm not saying we should have all control, but there's literally no control of it. There's no control over the certification, in most cases, of their coaches, their licensure, background checks. Some organizations do, but it's unregulated. Those organizations just choose to do it. So, you know, it is such an expensive thing at the lower levels. And the economy, you know, everything with it fuels it a little bit. And we're trying to keep those costs down at the high school level. Yet then sometimes kids think they're taking a step back at the high school level after having five changes of uniforms at grade four. And it's a challenge for us. It is a huge challenge.
Chris, I'm going to ask you to help us wrap up the show. Let's take the last 50-some minutes that we've been chatting. What are a couple of top line pieces of advice that you offer parents and grandparents as their 5, 10, 12-year-olds are just dipping their toe into athletics?
Sure. Well, I think it's interesting. We haven't even mentioned sports burnout yet on the show, and that is a really, really big issue. And I think it's important. It connects a lot of the comments that these guys have said already. If we don't keep sports fun and maintain that kind of enthusiasm and really treat youth and interscholastic sports for what it should be, a growth and developmental endeavor, not just a ticket to the pro leagues, because I see a lot of the other side of that. When kids really engage in what they feel is more of a professionalization of sports rather than a fun, youthful experience, they start to disengage. They want to cope with the stress they're dealing with. We sometimes see them turn to things like drugs and alcohol, reckless behaviors and things like that. And if it goes unnoticed, if you've got, you know, a parent or parents who are just not paying attention to that because they so badly want that scholarship or something beyond, it can lead to really catastrophic things. So pay attention, make it fun, and seek outside professional assistance when needed.
Phil, 30 seconds on the same subject. What do we need to know?
I think we need to know that sports, by and large, are a positive experience for young people. But to make it a positive experience, there's got to be a lot of positives surrounding that experience. Coaches need to be trained well. They need to be knowledgeable. They need to do the right thing in terms of preparing these young athletes to perform.
Coaches are teachers, and I believe sometimes they're the best teachers. And I do believe that they need to start teaching better, you know, the true values that athletics do offer, the educational values. And I think that's a focus of our organization. We're trying very hard to do that.
Thank you all for being here. An interesting show, and hopefully we'll have provided some value to those kids who have aspiring young athletes in the family. Dr. Philip Ward, Professor of Physical Education at Ohio State University, Dr. Chris Stankovich, founder of Advanced Human Performance Systems, and Jerry Snodgrass, Executive Director of the Ohio High School Athletic Association. Guys, thanks for being here, and thanks to all of you for tuning us in this week on Town Hall Ohio.
Town Hall Ohio is a project of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation and is brought to you with the support of Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Join us again next week for Town Hall, Ohio.